It is Baby Friday on the Fan Pregame. Across from us on the main network, Jays and Pirates starting up, but you can stay with us to talk a lot of things. But 1 week out from opening day, baseball season heating up, we're going to get into the Shohei Ohtani drama and a lot more.
And we are under a month away from the start of the Stanley Cup playoffs, which is great. Big games on the network tonight, including Bruins and Rangers in a rare cross-division four-point game. I will explain that a little bit later. Panthers, Predators, two of the hottest teams in the league. Sabres, Oilers. Oilers just don't lose anymore. Our guy Frank Saravalli will be on in a moment to run through a variety of topics.
We also got an NBA action doubleheader tonight on Sportsnet 1, New Orleans and Orlando, followed by Atlanta and Phoenix. And we're going to have former Raptor and NCAA champion Mo Pete joining us at 6:30 if your brackets are not busted yet.
Define busted.
I lost one game.
So I know. I'm not going to have a perfect bracket. So I guess I'm not busted yet, but I don't have a perfect bracket anymore. Only 11% of brackets remain perfect at this point, and we are, what, 4-6 hours into March Madness. We'll have Haley McGoldrick on at about 6:40 to talk about, well, the women's bracket, which gets underway tonight with the first four, but the entire tournament or the round of 64 is starting tomorrow on the women's side.
So you still have time to edit your women's brackets.
Yes, that one's
men, you're locked in. Yet. I'm locked in with Houston.
That's your pick?
It's my pick.
I think we all galaxy brain this entire thing at the office. Everyone's like, you don't want to pick UConn because you got to be better than everyone else like during all these games if everyone's going to pick UConn. And I feel like no one picked UConn, and therefore we're all going to be wrong.
We're all going to lose.
Because the plus 400 favorites to win the tournament have the best chances to win the tournament.
Well, I don't have the favorite picked in the women's bracket. We'll see if Haley can convince me into it. But I do have the story of women's basketball in general, taking that team to a championship. We will get into all that a little later in the show, but I can still edit it, so maybe she'll steer me a different direction. Before we bring in Frank, though, let's go back on this Shohei Ohtani story. So it kind of broke while we were on the air last night. So over the last 24 hours, everyone's had a bit of time to uncover as much as they can.
And plenty of time to joke around about it on the internet.
Oh, the internet's been elite. The internet remains undefeated when things like this happen.
Yeah, perfect internet topic.
It is. So Blair and Barker had Jeff Passan on, of course, earlier in the show, in their show earlier today. You can always check their podcast out at Blair and Barker and on Sportsnet Plus, etc. But here's a tidbit from the ESPN insider about what he's learned so far on the Shohei Ohtani gambling story.
The way that this whole thing unfolded was bound to invite skepticism and was bound to lead to cynicism, because on Tuesday, they had one version of the story, and on Wednesday, it was a completely different version. And when you go from one to the other in the fashion that this story did, as Tisha Thompson's brilliant reporting uncovered, and you don't fill in that gap, you don't have transparency, there is no explanation, you're going to have people who are speculating wildly.
Yes, speculation wildly is currently the theme of the last 24 hours. And I don't know how not to blame people for that, because this is the biggest name in not only baseball, but in possibly professional sports world and global impact at times.
Eliminate soccer? Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so.
This is Shohei Ohtani. Remember, we were chasing stories and chasing trips and wondering where Shohei was. And like, this guy moves the needle. And obviously what we've learned so far was that his longtime friend, this isn't just a interpreter that he met. Like, they have been together as a duo for his whole baseball career. Long, long time. Ipe Misahara was using or had spent $4.5 million in wire transfers from Ohtani's bank account. Ohtani's not facing any discipline right now, according to MLB officials, nor is he believed to be under active investigation. But his translator no longer is employed by the Dodgers. And there's $4.5 million floating somewhere, sent somewhere, and has to go through Shohei. And this is why this is such a crazy, important story to get right.
Yeah, and that's definitely key here. Like, again, jokes aside, like, everyone can talk about it, how it reads like an Onion article, $4.5 $1 million from Shohei Ohtani's bank account going to an illegal bookmaker. Like, imagine that headline just in a vacuum, and you didn't hear the part about, you know, the translator first, where you just saw that first. Like, that is almost unfathomable.
Well, I did see some articles written like that, too.
And that's fair, because that is factual, that money from his account went to an illegal bookmaker. And that's the key here, because it is an illegal bookmaker, which means there's going to be a federal investigation, which means we're going to find out exactly what happened here, I think, eventually, even if there are, you know, some steps taken towards minimizing the damage, if there's going to be any damage, at least on the Shohei Ohtani side. Like, this thing clearly isn't over yet, and it's severe enough that we're actually going to get information, because it crosses, it transcends sport. It goes into law. So we're going to find out more, and I'm interested to find out.
It, to me, feels like we are getting the start of something really big, something really important possibly in this sport. I don't know if it's going to be a reckoning, but this is certainly just the tip of the iceberg. A lot to come, still to come with this one. I'm sure Blair and Barker will be on it, of course, all week and as long as this takes. But that's our current update. We don't know much more, but we do know we have Frank Saravelli on the line of dailyfaceoff.com. Frank, appreciate you jumping on. How's your week been?
Better than Shohei Ohtani's.
Well, you mean you just keep your $4.5 million. You don't have to send it to anyone. You got yours in your bank account.
I mean, if I had $4.5 million, my kids and wife would pillage it, so there would be none left.
It's
none left
crazy
for
story.
The interpreter or any need for an interpreter.
Mm. Yeah, I could just go with another passport and a stay on an island far, far away from here.
There you go. Okay, so we'll see, you know, how the Shohei Ohtani story unfolds in Major League Baseball. Interested in seeing how the Tortorella Couturier story unfolds in the NHL and with the Philadelphia Flyers specifically. It's an interesting one because it feels like it didn't have to happen. Then the reaction didn't have to be as severe, and it just keeps snowballing for really, I think, no reason. Why is this becoming bigger than just a scratch? I understand that it's Tortorella involved, and it's the captain of the Philadelphia Flyers, and it's the market that is Philadelphia, but steps towards nipping into the bud, for me at least, have not been taken.
I totally agree. And if you were to ask me one word to describe the entire situation, it would be unnecessary. Because I watched the Flyers closely, and I've watched Sean Couturier very closely since he broke into the league. And yeah, I mean, it's clear that he hasn't been at his best in the last number of weeks. But if you watch this team, he didn't need to come out of the lineup. He certainly wasn't the one player that you looked at and said, you know what, that's the guy. That's the reason we're not winning. We need to make a lineup change. We're dragging our captain out of the lineup. It's okay. So that's one part of it. The other part is John Tortorella is his worst enemy. And I don't know why he can't just put the issue to bed. Part of it is that we've had lots of other former players chime in on social media, including Brandon Dubinsky in the last couple of days, who's been outstanding. But then you have Sean Couturier come out and say that he doesn't like the way that he's been treated. You have Sean Couturier's agent say that John Tortorella has essentially ignored him and not given him any explanation. And so when I send out a tweet today saying, hey, look, here's the coach that demands accountability and provides none himself or resists it himself, it isn't necessarily to media. I'm not saying that as media guy that doesn't get quotes. First and foremost, you have a right to answer your own players, let alone the player that you just named captain 36 days ago. And then the next part of it is, had you just come out after the game on Tuesday and answered questions as and gave an explanation as to why you made the decision to scratch Sean Couturier, then this probably all would have went away. And instead, it almost feels like, yeah, you know what? The Flyers beat the Leafs the other night. And in parentheses, how/why did the Leafs lose that game? But the bigger thing is, now it feels like he hears all this noise, he knows people are talking about it, and he stubbornly wants to double down on this team in a playoff chase, scratching him for a second straight game against the Carolina Hurricanes. At some point, this becomes a bigger story than just coach scratching new captain. It now becomes coach against captain, mm-hmm. and I don't necessarily know how that's going to play out in John Tortorella's favor.
Is the headline then again also coach begins to unravel or once again unravels? Because we've seen this with Tortorella, right? Like, he has an immensely positive impact early. He gets more out of a team than you're expected to get. And then it just seems like the influence wanes. Like, is this just the start of the influence once again waning for Tortorella, where he just picks the wrong battle, this time with a captain that you just named, and the message now is lost? Like, it's just the same story over again.
It's one thing to deliver the message. Again, like I said on Tuesday, you know, if you want to single out Sean Couturier and really send a statement and shockwave through your dressing room, fine. But I don't think anyone in that locker room could look at this situation honestly and say, for a team that's struggling and holding on for dear life in this playoff chase, is better off with a Selke Trophy winner not playing. It makes no sense to me. And when you begin to go down that path and you give no explanation, you give no reasoning to player and to the rest of the team, it makes it seem like you're above everyone else here. Mm-hmm. You ask, like I said, you ask everyone for accountability, you try and hold players to accountability for their play, yet you don't feel any need to explain yourself. That reeks, and players see right through it. And as I said, it's one thing to do it, and you can't really argue with it. They won the other night. But now the second time around, oof. I don't think that's going to end well for them. I really don't.
And they got the Hurricanes tonight, so it's no cakewalk. It's a very tough test. And you know, once you lose a locker room, I've been in them before, it's hard to gain that trust back, especially when it's your captain being the one kind of trotted in and out of these discussions. It's a tough spot to be in. We will definitely be following how this team performs down the stretch. Were you at the GM meetings, Frank?
I was. That's why I'm so
tanned?
Beautifully bronzed.
Yes,
here.
Yes. Between the two of you, I'm looking ghostly here. What happens in these meetings? It seems like a lot of fun, a lot of sun. Anything important get done this time around?
Well, by the way, I mean, like, can we get a PWHL team in South Florida? Like Detroit last weekend.
I'll be the GM.
Not exactly. I mean, not exactly South Florida. So maybe they could help you out on the tan front. But what I would say is, to me, the most interesting part of the week was not necessarily the small rule tweaks or the fact that they talked about LTIR in a broader scope or the e-bug situation. For me, it's reading in between the lines of what wasn't said specifically related to the Arizona Coyotes. Mm. The league had an incredible opportunity this week to definitively say that the Coyotes will be playing in Mullet Arena next season, regardless of whatever happens with June's land auction that the Coyotes are trying to win to build their new arena. And they didn't. So what's happening in between now and then as the league looks for different contingencies and explores different avenues and opportunities to potentially what a lot of people believe behind the scenes is there a chance that the league makes a play to wrestle back control of the Coyotes from owner Alex Mariello and then take the franchise and grab a big relocation fee from Salt Lake City that they can then sprinkle to the rest of owners around the league. Look, there's a lot happening behind the scenes. Gary Bettman said that he didn't want to talk about it, and I understand why he doesn't want to, you know, sprinkle some fuel on the fire that's burning already in the desert, but there's a lot going on here right now with Arizona.
I mean, that story feels like it's never going to end, but how long would it take to do something like that? Wrestle control, get the relocation fee to Salt Lake City. Are we talking like a year, 2 years, 3 years, or is that like a next year type thing?
No, this is like within the next 60 to 75 days. And that's really what the NHL is trying to weigh at this exact moment in time. I think they know that they're dealing with an owner who is headstrong and confident that he can get this arena built. They're dealing with a market which we know that the NHL really likes because they've been so committed to it for two decades now in what has been incredibly strong headwinds. And more than that, they're trying to figure out how this could all play out. if we are not dealing with a willing participant in this process in Maruelo, and we have to go down this path, is it worth fighting? What are the potential ramifications of that? And then the next part of it would be, how do we make things right in Arizona? If we do pull up stakes and try and gain back control of this franchise and so some way or the other make Alex Maruelo whole, do we then guarantee that within the next 5 years, there will be an expansion franchise that returns to Arizona once an arena is built? Like, there's so many layers to this and what the NHL is working behind the scenes on trying to do. Deputy Commissioner Bill Daly acknowledged on Wednesday that June, the auction date is, that's too late to pivot for next season. Mm-hmm. So then naturally, as I said, the next question was, so does that mean Arizona staying put for next season? And he said, no, I'm not willing to say that. And then it's read between the lines. So a lot of people took that to mean, oh, that probably means that the Coyotes are staying put. And we know, you know, that's certainly a potentiality, and the league would ultimately like to have a new arena there and stable ownership that they trust. I just don't know that all those things are going to align in time.
Lots to keep our tabs on with Arizona and possibly expansion. We're talking to Frank Saravelli, of course, of dailyfaceoff.com. Sad week for some former NHL heavyweights passing, Chris Simon, this week. I wonder if there's any conversations happening. And maybe it was too late that this had happened a little bit after the GM meetings, but with the NHL, with the NHLPA, trying to help players that are suffering, players that have suffered, are these conversations things that are happening? Is it something that's going to happen this offseason, possibly?
You know, I think there's a lot to unpack. First off, I think the NHL Alumni Association and Glenn Healy have done an incredible job in this space. They've helped quite literally, I think, hundreds of players that we never know about, that's completely confidential. That has been a huge resource for former players. No questions asked. I think from a league standpoint, the NHL has made the game a lot safer over the last decade. The NHLPA has tried to do their part in helping transition players who are retiring and stepping away from the game to find that next phase, their next, you know, part of their career. A lot of these guys retiring at 26 or 30 or 35. I mean, you know, they've got a full life in front of them that a lot of times they often don't know what to do next. So there's been multiple layers to this. I think a lot of people have been pulling on the rope and it's heading in the right direction. That said, I think more can be done. And this is something that hurts. I mean, it hits home for a lot of people who are either friends and teammates of Chris Simon, fans. Regardless of whatever it is, we ask a lot of these players who are paid handsomely and earn a nice living, but for our entertainment value, we ask a lot, and sometimes they slip through the cracks on the other end. And it's not just the physical play, I think, with Chris Simon. There's a lot of layers to his story as well. He's, I believe, one of those players that was dealing with some significant financial difficulties for career earnings that evaporated in the hands of poor financial advisors. He's dealing with some family issues. Like, there's a lot of stuff going on in addition to the health issues that he was reportedly experiencing that I think ultimately end up contributing to someone that's gone way too soon at 52.
Chatting with Frank Saravelli of dailyfaceoff.com. Big game on Sportsnet tonight, Rangers and Bruins. I called it earlier a 4-point game, but cross divisional. 4-point game. That's because there's a big difference between getting the first seed and the second seed in the Eastern Conference, given how many good teams are in the Eastern Conference. There may just be 7. So it would give you an easier playoff or make you not have to deal with the Tampa Bay Lightning if both these teams end up being the division winners. If you had to hitch your wagon to one of these teams through the playoffs, are you more confident in the Rangers or the Bruins?
The Rangers for me, and it's not really close. Look, I know the Bruins have had a great season. It's certainly exceeded any expectations that I had given the players that they lost. Charlie Coyle has been unbelievable. Their goaltending has continued to be excellent. I think their defense is really good. But for me, when Shesterkin is back to playing at the level that he is, I think the New York Rangers have the best right side of any defense in the NHL. And then you look at the forward group and the year that Panarin has had. I know Pasternak's been sublime as usual. This Rangers team is, they've set a franchise record for most days spent in first place in a season in their division. They're really good. And I think they've found their stride a bit here where they were great out of the gate. They waned a little bit and also coincided with a period of time in which Shesterkin wasn't very good. And now they're back at an elite level again. And I think they're going to be a really tough out in the playoffs. I think that Metro division bracket is going to be no cakewalk with the Canes, the way that they loaded up at the deadline. And you mentioned the battle for first place. Yes, there's also, by the way, the President's Trophy on the line. I can't help but think that the team sitting in the best position in the East is the Carolina Hurricanes, going back to John Tortorella and the Flyers, getting that 2-3 matchup. That's the sweet spot in the East.
Yeah, that may just be. That would be a good spot. And then maybe, well, you're not having to deal with, you might have to deal with Tampa, not the Rangers, because the Tampa Bay Lightning are on quite the run themselves. And I want to give you one more either or before we let you go. There are three teams with an 80% winning percentage this month. They are Nashville, Tampa Bay, and Colorado. Nashville and Tampa Bay have sort of come out of the blue just a little bit. If we're looking at two wild card threats between Tampa and Nashville, I guess there is space to still get into a top three in the division. Which one is more menacing for a potential one seed?
It's got to be the Lightning, right? I mean, if you were to tell me right now, Lightning, Bruins, round one, who has the best chance to win, what would the odds look like? I mean, I would shade it right now like 52 or 53 to 48 or 47. I mean, it's going to be really close. And I know a lot of people would be sitting here listening going, well, what about UC Saros? Why can't he steal a series for the Preds? He can, but we're also talking about the big cat on the other end and Andrei Vasilevsky, no pushover himself. And anytime, look, the Lightning have had, by their standards and by their consistency standards, a subpar regular season. But when you look at the stars that they still have, the pillars of their team, Vasilevsky, Hedman, by the way, Sergachev skating again, Point, Stamkos, Kucherov up front. Like, I'm sorry, that's one team I don't want to play in round one with all their playoff experience, because they're going into it like, not only have we been there, done that, we don't really have anything to lose because people are looking at us as the underdog.
They had that championship pedigree. Sometimes it's hard to play against someone that knows how to win, like the Tampa Bay Lightning. So I would hope to just avoid all of them in general. Frank Saravelli, appreciate you coming on. Hope you have a good weekend. We'll chat with you next week.
See you guys.
Thanks. Frank Saravelli, dailyfaceoff.com. Interesting about Arizona there.
Yeah, very interesting about Arizona. I mean, it's not often that the story is interesting because it is kind of a tired story.
But this is different.
But he, you know, we know that the NHL is committed, and Frank said that. Said the NHL is committed. Maroello, headstrong in his, like, efforts to try and keep this team there. But I also think, like, the other part of that, which is often ignored, is that the people in Arizona seem to be committed and headstrong themselves and not, like, paying for an arena to just welcome the Coyotes back in to a taxpayer situation, right? Like, it just feels like there are all these competing parties bouncing off each other, and they're never just going to get along, and it might take something like just leaving and then expansion and like, ownership that is a little bit more stable that can get it done without taxpayer money. But again, this is beyond my pay grade.
Most definitely. I think this ticking clock being a lot shorter than we had thought, needing to know before this land sale, possibly this summer, that puts a lot of pressure on this next couple of month or two of time, because the idea that I didn't realize it could be this quick, they could just swoop up and go to Salt Lake City that quickly.
And it makes you think a little bit more about that ill-timed post where Salt Lake City was just happening to drop by and levy their interest in having a team as soon as possible. Like, all these things are connected, right?
And galaxy branding.
If they're ready to take the team and there's no solution, maybe it's going to be a pit stop or a permanent pit stop in Salt Lake while they revisit Arizona later. Because we know they are committed to Arizona. It's just, is it going to work in the here and now?
Would they change the mascot? The Salt Lake City?
I think if you're spending big bucks, you get to do whatever you want.
we'll brainstorm that during the break, what they could possibly have the Salt Lake City blank next year. We'll take a quick break. Mo Pete's going to join us. We got two guests in the next 30 minutes, so we're going to fly by here. Former Raptor, former NCAA champion. Got a lot to go through. March Madness obviously underway. Raptors in a bit of a tough spot. He once played for the Raptors when they were in a bit of a tough spot. Rebuild some culture, rebuild some vibes. He's in town for a little alumni basketball tournament, so we'll talk about that too. And then Haley McGoldrick of Sportsnet is going to help us break down the women's side of the bracket, which begins tonight with the first four games. And obviously we got the Caitlin Clark lore of it all. All that to come on the Fan Pregame.
Everything Raptors, before and after the games. The Raptor Show with Will Liu. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back on the Fan Pregame Sportsnet 360 and Sportsnet 590. The Fan, the brackets are busting. The last I saw was 9%. Remain. It's like not even a full day. It's tough. It's a tough game. I'm just, you know, throwing darts at a wall.
I mean, yeah, we're already down to single digits. Is it normally like there's like a decent percentage that gets through the first day?
I don't think many people get through the first day.
Because there hasn't been anything crazy yet. Like, it hasn't been a big upset yet.
No.
I think we're kind of rolling through here. Michigan State was a 9. Mm. Got an 11. I guess that's a big-ish upset. But other than that, it's been pretty. Two 11s. Two 11s would be hard to have, like, unanimous consensus with. But
well, only 9% of people in the world that have filled out brackets currently have this.
They're all like us, galaxy-braining the whole thing.
That's the problem. We're just galaxy-braining it all. And this next 30 minutes, we're going to talk to Mo P. We're going to talk to Haley McGoldrick of Sportsnet about basketball. Quickly, we haven't talked about the Raptors in a while, and that's probably for the best. It's too bad because tomorrow night is a big one. Tomorrow, Shea's in town. It's like the opportunity to see a potential MVP play. And it's hard to watch Raptors basketball right now because they are putting out a skeleton crew, and it's not really a fault of their own. A lot of injured players, and some not with the team. It's just, it's hard. They're losing by, what, 30, 35, 40 points every night. And shout out to the Raptors show for grinding through it.
Yeah, it's been a bit of a task this year.
A task is the right way.
And for Raptors fans, right? Like, mm-hmm. It just hasn't been, even when it's dire, there's something to latch onto, right? But then you lose Scottie Barnes. Mm-hmm. Obviously, RJ Barrett's not available mm-hmm. right now. The skeleton crew, as you mentioned, like, you're just not getting what was promised. And what was promised was, hey, we're getting a glimpse into the future. Yes, it's not, exactly what we want it to look like. It's not the ideal, but it's a glimpse into the future. And we'll see what this team is going to look like. And we'll see maybe some real building blocks placed in the foundation. Mm-hmm. And you can feel good about going into the offseason, what you need, and going into next season with a new coach. Not new coach, but newish coach still in Darko Rajakovic. But everything that they'd want to accomplish here in the back half of the season has not been possible because of these absences. Now, you can quibble a little bit with, like, okay, why isn't Darko having this team more competitive on a night-to-night basis? Mm-hmm. And I see both sides of that because, really, he doesn't have much of a chance with good teams coming in and that are far deeper, even using bench lineups. They just don't really stand a chance, which is sad, and it's disappointing that it's got to this point. But there's going to be a hard refresh. There's going to be a reset, and they are moving towards something that's going to be more palatable than it has been over the last few years. It's just like this last little hurdle that they got to overcome, which is painstaking to get over.
And it's tough. Next year's the 30th anniversary of the Raptors. Like, there should be so much excitement around a celebration of that sort. That is, you know, you've won a championship. You brought a championship to the city that hadn't seen one in a very long time, of course. And you've got some big time names that could come back and be a part of that celebration. I'm hoping and hearing and rumbling.
Oh, you're hearing
through the internet that they might do the purple dino jerseys and, like, really go back to their roots and celebrate that. And it would be nice to have that with a team that has play-in aspirations, first round playoff aspirations, because this is a celebratory season, right? That's next year. And who knows? And if you're more accustomed to watching March Madness because you're thinking about draft picks, well, the Raptors could have a couple. So maybe that brings your interest level up.
Unfortunately, that's part of the misery, though, because they may get saddled with this pick that they could ship off to San Antonio, given where the ping pong balls mm-hmm. land. But maybe they have to make the pick, which means they won't have one next year. And if you're looking around at these games today, well, you're not seeing much NBA talent that's like, you know, knocking mm-hmm. on the door, ready to change the fortunes of a franchise. And maybe, you know, Scotty Barnes wouldn't have been necessarily, you know, front and center on a March Madness kickoff in his freshman season with Florida State, but it's not giving much hope to teams that are desperate for something, given what we've seen, given the state of this draft, given what's available. So the Raptors may be looking at a pretty disadvantageous situation where they got to take the sixth pick and there's just not much there. But I guess that's where Masai Ujiri's got to show his worth.
They've been great at player development before.
The right pick wasn't Scotty Barnes, or at least on most people's draft. It was like Jalen Suggs. Mm-hmm. That's who the Raptors were going to take. They went Scotty Barnes. They got the rookie in the year. Mm-hmm. They've done it before. They've got to unearth talent. It's just, is there any talent available when they have to take that pick?
All right, we're gonna pivot from Mo, and we're going to bring in Haley McGoldrick first. We're just like playing musical chairs here. Haley, how are you? Thanks so much for jumping on.
Hi, I'm good. How are you guys?
We're good. We heard there's a Raptors media basketball tournament today, and I just remembered when we were hitting the floor up for our charity basketball tournament. So,
are you guys on the same team for that?
Were we on the same team?
No, because you were on team sport. Oh, yeah. I was on team media. I hit one basket and waved down Blake Murphy like I just hit a 30-piece.
Yeah, and your team won and mine didn't, but we still invite you on the show because that's girl power.
Thank you. Thank you for doing so.
Yes, of course. So this is an exciting time of year. Like it's you know what's different this time around, which I'm really proud of, is it's March Madness, and the biggest name in basketball is a woman. It's Caitlin Clark, and she's stealing the spotlight from both sides of the brackets. And I think for you, and I read your great piece up on Sportsnet.ca about just the movement of women's sports right now, this must be a really exciting time for you to get to cover this.
Oh, absolutely. And you think even 2 years ago was the first time that women were even able to use the March Madness branding. Before mm-hmm. it was just called the NCAA Women's Tournament. And so it's huge. And there's a lot of people who are watching the tournament because of the fact that Caitlin Clark is in it. I saw a tweet that said, me trying to fill out my men's bracket when the only player I know is Caitlin Clark. And it made me laugh because mm-hmm. it's so true. The discourse around it has been phenomenal. Even you look at ticket sales, the cheapest get in the door ticket for the Final Four for the women's side is double the price on StubHub than the men's side. It was $323 for the women's side and $156 for the men's. So it's just incredible to see the growth, the fact that so many people are tuning in, that they've had record numbers across viewership for mm-hmm. women's sports. It's very exciting.
Okay, let's talk about the Caitlin Clark effect first then, and we'll get into March Madness. But I mean, trying to measure it is probably really difficult. Trying to see the impact so early on in her career, which is an exciting thing to say as someone that's going to start the second part of her career. How are you most seeing what Caitlin Clark means to basketball and how you cover it and how you support it and how you cheer?
I think it is the visibility and viewership, which is the biggest thing Fox put out. They're the Big Ten rights holder, and that their number of viewership for women's basketball was bigger than their men's side. People mm-hmm. want to watch their games. And because of the fact people are tuning in to watch Caitlin Clark, that means that other games get to be on TV now because people are watching women's basketball. That's the biggest thing. If you put it on TV, people are going to watch it. Millions of people are going to tune in. You saw the game against Penn State when she was almost going to beat the record. Saw viewership numbers that were huge. And then against Nebraska again, when she fell a little short. And every time Caitlin Clark's on TV, people are going to watch it. And in turn, that turns into ticket sales. You saw that for a courtside seat for the game where she broke the record, it was $10,000. Like people were paying absurd amounts to be there because of the fact that she was making history. And then she broke Pistol Pete's record. And even now people want to see her one last dance. Mm-hmm. And I think the biggest thing too is that it snowballs from Caitlin Clark because you watch maybe an Iowa Ohio State game. You see an Ohio State player you like, you start following them. Maybe that becomes your team. Then you start following that team because even though players graduate, they're bringing in new talent. Or maybe you watch and you see South Carolina is the number one seed. Okay, Dawn Staley is one of the best college basketball mm-hmm. coaches ever. You're going to start watching South Carolina now. It becomes so much bigger than herself. So even though people might be starting to get into women's basketball because of Caitlin Clark, it snowballs into so much more than that.
Yeah, you're definitely right about like sort of the sprawl effect of it, right? Because Caitlin Clark touched South Carolina last year, beat them right in the national semifinal, and of course lost to LSU in the final, and I have some information to go on both those teams because I'm watching Caitlin Clark in both those games. So as Ailish mentioned, the tournament begins tonight with the first four games. Winner of UT Martin Holy Cross earns the right to play Caitlin Clark in Iowa on Saturday at 3 p.m. In a primetime slot. So we know Caitlin Clark can probably single-handedly maybe get through a UT Martin, but to win the NCAA double tournament, like we just saw it with last year with LSU, like they couldn't hang with LSU. LSU was better. LSU had more, and Caitlin Clark needed more with her in order to, or will need more with her in order to win a national championship. So what is the supporting cast like for Caitlin Clark this year with Iowa? Are they prepared to go back to a national championship game and this time perhaps win it?
I think so. The last year, one of her biggest role players was Monica Cesano, and she was her big player, and she would, a lot of her assists would go to Monica, and she would go to the basket. And now this year, she's got Hannah Stuhlke, who the game against Penn State, when people thought Caitlin would have needed 60 points to break the record, but Hannah Stuhlke scored 47 in that game. She popped off. They have answers for when Caitlin Clark doesn't have the ball in her hands, and I think that's the biggest thing, is you see her get double, triple teamed, and it's like, okay. But they have other players like Hannah. That's probably their biggest threat, and she's a big body. She'll be in the paint that Iowa has to support her. It's not just going to be Caitlin Clark needing to score 40 points to drag them to the finish line.
So there was a lot of drama about or around LSU this year, right? They win the national championship last year in the game against Caitlin Clark, and it just seemed like it didn't completely unravel, but there were some issues for sure. They lost in the SEC championship game to South Carolina, who hasn't lost this year. But LSU still is going to be one of those teams circled, and a lot of people will be interested in what they have as they try to repeat as national champions. So what's the situation right now for LSU?
I think LSU's come into their own a little bit. And first, credit to South Carolina, because that's a phenomenal program. People are saying that Dawn Staley is doing some of the best coaching of her career, which is wild to say because she won a national championship 2 years ago. She won a national championship with Asia Wilson. She's won on the national scale with Team USA. She's a phenomenal coach. So all credit to South Carolina, but LSU's got Angel Reese, who was the MVP of the tournament last year. They've got Flo J. Johnson, who came back. They've got Haley Van Lith, who transferred from Louisville. And I think at first some of the problem was that Haley Van Lith was having a little bit of trouble adjusting, because at Louisville she was the primary ball handler. She had the ball in her hands a lot because she was such a dominant scorer for Louisville. But then when she went to LSU, you're getting the ball in Angel's hands. You're giving the ball away a little bit more. But she's finally come into her own, and she's got a little bit more rhythm when it comes to LSU. So I think they have a chance to go far as well. And Angel Reese, of course, she's phenomenal on the board. She's a great rebounder. She's going to be a threat. People are going to need to shut down again as well. So they're kind of coming into their own, but losing to South Carolina isn't a red flag going into this tournament, because South Carolina is a team to beat in this tournament.
Why are they so good? Why is South Carolina, you know, minus money favorites? I know they've been there. I know they've got the great coach, but this is March Madness for a reason. Sometimes things don't play out the way that they should. You got UConn on the men's bracket. That is the heavy favorite, but I bet against them because I thought maybe that something would change. But South Carolina being the favorite is the way that everyone seems to see it.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is that when they lost to Leah Boston, people were wondering, how are they going to regroup? Obviously, she's an incredible player. But then you've got Camila Cardoso, who, she was the one who hit that three-point attempt for South Carolina at the buzzer. And it was the first three-pointer of her career that she ever hit in college to hit that winner. And then they've got Raven Johnson, who's really improved as well. I think the biggest thing with South Carolina is that Dawn Staley's amazing at developing talent. And you hear people talk about her and they want to play for her. You even hear Asia Wilson, to this day, she graduated 7 years ago, and that's a mother figure to her. That's somebody that they want to play for. And so there's a reason why they're one of the top recruiting classes in the country. And I think the biggest thing with women's basketball as well, too, I think you have the advantage where, because players have to stay for 3 years and most stay for four, you get a little bit more of that development versus on the men's side, where there's a lot of one and done players and you're constantly trying to recruit. South Carolina obviously gets top recruits, but I think the way that Dawn Staley develops players is phenomenal. And they really do play as a family and they play for each other. And you can see that in their chemistry on the court.
So they were doing all that last year, though, and it wasn't enough to get to a national championship game. I'm not going to lay minus money on South Carolina after last year. Should we be looking at Iowa plus 600, Caitlin Clark? We know there's magic there. We know that she's the best player. We know the storybook ending is a possibility. A narrative bet is a good bet in my eyes, usually. Plus 600, even just to, for a good sweat, get to a semifinal. Like, would you advise that, Haley?
I like the storybook ending of it all too. Like, I like the poetry mm-hmm. in basketball and sports and stuff like that. And I think Caitlin Clark would want to go out on a high note, because making the national championship wasn't good enough, and you saw how defeated she looked after last year. And I think that's how she wants to go out too. And you've seen that she's the type of player who will drop 49 points. She needed 8 to break the record, dropped 49, because she can just do that, because she's that type of player. And Iowa does have talent around them. I do think there's other really talented schools that they're going to have to get through first. Mm-hmm. You look at a USC. USC is super talented. They won the Pac-12 for the first time since 2014. That's another storybook ending, because the Pac-12's dissolving. Mm-hmm. USC is going to the Big Ten. So you're looking for that. Juju Watkins is one of the best freshmen in basketball right now, and they've defeated Stanford, who's another number one seed, who's a team to beat. Cameron Brink was recruited ahead of Caitlin Clark in 2020. She's a phenomenal player. You're going to have to look at that. I would love to see Iowa do it just for kind of the stories of it all. But there's kind of, you know, those storybook endings all around. I think it doesn't hurt, especially at plus 600. But there are some teams that are definitely going to give them a run for their money.
USC, 30-1. I've got that one loaded up for our best bet segment. So, you know, okay. Just getting on the live updates here from Haley. We're talking with Haley McGoldrick of Sportsnet. I'm going to ask you about the WNBA possibly coming to Toronto. Now, obviously, that's a pretty exciting thing for us to live in the city. And we've seen firsthand here how great the PWHL has been in its inaugural season. So why would a WNBA team in Toronto work?
I think because, like you just said, looking at the PWHL and looking at that success of it, it started January 1st and you couldn't even get a single game ticket because season ticket holders sold out the games. You see that they're constantly, you were on the ground in Detroit, you saw mm-hmm. the game in Pittsburgh, they're constantly bringing in thousands of people through the door. And so the WNBA was smart because they've even tested those waters. They brought the game to Toronto last year, sellout crowd at Scotiabank Arena of over 19,000 people. They're doing that again in Edmonton this year and kind of putting their toe in the water to see how it is. And I think just the biggest thing is that before the PWHL, there's kind of no professional women's league in Canada. And so we have the PWHL in hockey, and we're going to have Project 8, Diana Matheson's project mm-hmm. for soccer. But there's no women's basketball league. And as much as the WNBA is maybe going to expand in Toronto, you're showing in these exhibition games that we want a team. And even though maybe a bid was rejected before, a private group going in and saying, okay, we're committed, we're going to do this, I think is huge, because of the fact that there's no league here. There should be some sort of representation for basketball for young Canadian women, Canadian women of all ages to look up to. So having a team would certainly be a start, whether it be in Toronto or elsewhere. But I think that the audiences that come out, and even you're seeing viewership over year growing in Canada as well, when it's put on Sportsnet, when it's put on other channels, people are watching it. And so I think that data really shows that's why it would work, because you're not just throwing something out there and hoping it's going to work. It's backed up on data. It's backed up on people buying tickets, coming to games, watching the WNBA when it's on TV.
If I make a push to come back and unretire for the PWHL, will you, you know, make a push for the WNBA if they come to Toronto?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. I'm not sure they could use a 5'7" like shooting guard who's the slowest person on earth, but I'll try.
Girl,
my best.
There's a role for all of us, okay? I'm a bench warmer, left bench, I'll tape sticks. You can do, we'll find a spot for us.
I'm water girl.
Perfect. Well, we'll make it happen. You know, chase your dreams. Haley, we appreciate your time tonight. This was great. I'm going to be placing my bets and finishing my bracket with all of your info, and I hope you enjoy March Madness and all the excitement to come. Thanks so much.
Thank you guys for having me. Take care.
Haley McGoldrick, Sportsnet. You can catch her stuff on City News Toronto as well. We got some stuff cooking now
she
in
knows
my
her
bracket.
Stuff. It's like I gotta get in the lab myself. There's a lot of names, a lot of numbers thrown at me.
Well, she's a pro's pro. Let's go. USC was an interesting one, 30-1. I mean, I'm going Iowa. Like, I'm sorry. I'm a storybook.
I mean, it's the perfect Dalish bet in so many ways.
I'm seeing it at 650.
Okay. That worries me that it's not getting bet. You know what I mean?
It doesn't worry me.
No?
It fuels me.
Like, even if she
gets...
If Iowa just... The number one seed, if they get through their region, which they'll be heavy favorites to get mm-hmm. through their region, you'll get into a national semifinal. Maybe you get South Carolina again. You can at least hedge off a 650.
This Caitlin Clark can do... She can turn the game on a dime. She can be like, I'm ready to win this game. I'm ready to break this record. You're here for me. She's got that perfect, like, calm, but, like, confident, a little bit cocky. Like, she embraces it all and delivers. So if this is their last dance before she's the first overall pick at WNBA and then creates this lifelong story of following Caitlin Clark, tell me that they're not already at Netflix waiting to follow her to to a national championship and then to first overall pick at WNBA and to change a whole franchise. Yeah, I just see it.
We got an NHL show on Amazon coming, right? We got Receiver, I think, coming on Netflix. Yeah. Like, you got to
say, let me backtrack a bit. We got too many things going on there. Too many stories.
Content's fine. Content's. But I mean, yeah, the Caitlin Clark one is.
I mean, it's ready.
It's
probably being written right now.
Were you surprised at all that she decided to leave college?
No. She's done it all. She's broke. She
hasn't won a national championship yet.
Well, just you wait, dog.
Plus 650.
Couple weeks away. But I think, you know, even let's say they lose on a buzzer beater at the national championship. She's done it all. She's accomplished that part of your career. I think it's almost a disservice to go back and do it again. You know, like they're selling this. They're you can't even get tickets to her college games. It's time to start the pro career.
Because
when you transition to WNBA, she's not going to be the best player next year. Like,
no, it's a learning curve. There's an argument that it may never be as good as it is right now.
I think it's going to take her a few seasons to be the Caitlin Clark as dominant as she was in college. That's understandable, but some people don't understand the pivot isn't as easy as it seems. You know, if she's a top player in
NCAA. It's just as it is in any sport, right?
Exactly.
Like there is a bit of a...
So it might be a year or two or three until she's, you know, really contributing at the WNBA level to the way that she is now. But you're waiting for money. You're waiting for, like, starting your major career. I'm glad she's doing it.
The other wrinkle in the financial aspect of it is that the NIL possibilities for her are immense. Not even possibilities. The realities right now are immense. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the entry level salary would be in the WNBA, but there's definitely earning potential just staying in college because that used to be the conversation, right? You leave as quick as possible because you have to cash in on your athletic prowess. I mean, Caitlin Clark is actively cashing in on her athletic prowess as she earns while being the person selling out
it makes sense.
That stadium in Iowa and making it so that you have to be rich in order to just be in that building when she's playing. So that's part of the conversation, but the dream for anyone, right? I mean, you've had it. The dream for an athlete in college athletics is to go to the next level. And I guess she's taken that plunge.
When would the draft be? It'd be this summer. I forget who has first overall pick, but they're obviously, they know that it's time. Like, it's, maybe that also had to do with it too. Indiana. Thanks, Holly.
Is it Indiana?
Indiana. So you know you're going to go to Indiana in X amount of weeks.
It's
so,
Iowa adjacent, isn't it?
It's all the same kind of thing. All right, let's take the final looks at our best bets. But yeah, Iowa plus 650 is going to be my pick for women's March Madness bracket.
I think that's a show bet. I think we're...
Let's do it right now. You have to do it tonight. You got to do it tonight.
I will.
Okay. I'm going with my dog of the day tonight in the NHL. It is the St. Louis Blues. I don't think I've ever selected St. Louis Blues on the show, but I believe in these guys. I mean, they're playing the Ottawa Senators. The Senators are minus like 135. The Sens are bad. They're bad. The Blues are not great, but they are playing for something. They've had some big wins over the last stretch. They're hotter than the Sens are. So for plus money on a game that could mean something to the Blues, I'm going to have them as my dog of the day.
Okay. There's a lot of good stuff, I think, on the board, on the card today. A lot of options, at least NHL-wise. And, of course, there's a lot of basketball going on with March Madness in the first day. But the Winnipeg Jets as slight favorites in New Jersey has my attention. We had Sean Reynolds on earlier in the week. He said that the Jets, how they've separated themselves from other teams in the West or the Central Division, is that they always beat teams that they're better than. Well, they're better than the New Jersey Devils. So at nearly a pick 'em, I will take the Winnipeg Jets to win. Also, like the Lightning puck line, the Lightning are incredibly hot. They're in San Jose tonight. They're better than San Jose. So I like them to win by a couple goals tonight in the Shark Tank. And when we're going to college basketball, I think we need one at least, right?
Yeah,
I like
what do
the
you
Drake
got?
Tonight. I like the Drake tonight.
Oh, Drake.
The Drake gets it done over Wazoo in the nightcap. Might be the only game I get to watch because we've been working today.
We've got a big one up on Sportsnet after us. It is New York and Boston up on Sportsnet 360. That's a huge one. It's a 4-point night. How did you explain it again?
It's a 4-point game. Because you like take away something. 2 points from the other team. In the pursuit to win the top seed, because guess who you get to play? Washington or
it's a big one.
Red Wings instead of the Tampa Bay Lightning. So I think Boston and New York will be charged up for this game on sports.
And then if you like messiness, how about Chicago and Anaheim at 10 p.m.? Just, that's your nightcap.
Screams Connor Bedard anytime goal, doesn't it?
It certainly does. All right, that's it for us. That was a fun one. Be back tomorrow, Friday, to wrap up your week on the Fan Pregame.